Good morning and welcome to Real Talk on Real Estate, Finding Your Way Home. My name is Sherry Doherty and I have the pleasure of having with me in studio this morning, Karen Mathey, who is one of the owners and mortgage professionals at The Mortgage Professionals. Thank you for being with me this morning, Karen.
It is my pleasure.
We are here to talk about all things mortgage market. There's a lot going on in the world and it directly impacts the economy, our personal economy, and the Canadian economy, and what that does to bank rates and mortgage rates and us as individuals. So I'm ready to jump right in and just ask you straight up, Karen, what is going on?
Well, it is a good time to ask that after the weekend we just had, because there has been a lot going on since the start of this year. We started this year very, I guess, optimistic about where mortgage rates would be this year. Not that we necessarily saw them falling to COVID levels, where we saw fixed rates of 2 and 3%.
Right.
We didn't think they were going back there, but we thought that they might start to trend a bit downwards after a couple of years of higher spiking rates. And we were on trend to do that. And then in February, when the announcement was made that the U.S. was invading Iran, that caused initially caused a fear of an increase in oil and gas prices rather than the actual increase in oil and gas prices.
Yep.
And a lot of markets move off of fear and news and things like that. So off the back of fear of an increase, we saw bond yields move up. And I'll explain in a minute why bond yields are important, but they drive fixed mortgage rates in Canada.
Okay.
So when we saw bond yields move up, we saw fixed mortgage rates starting to initially creep up. It was slow at first.
Okay.
But over time, I would say fixed mortgage rates have gone up maybe not quite a half a percent, a little over half a percent in some areas and a little less in others. So that's a pretty steep move to happen since February, really.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. And we're... Every time a bit of news comes out, I feel like we're going the wrong way.
Okay. Also, the news generally is not positive.
Correct. Well, it's funny. Usually not positive news economically is good for mortgage rates, ironically.
Okay.
Right? When we're in the way to think about it is this. When we're in a recession, when we're doing really poorly economically, the Bank of Canada wants to stimulate spending.
Yes.
They want people to go out and spend their money. So what do they do to encourage that? They drop interest rates.
Right.
Right. So variable rates tend to drop in that environment. And sometimes because fixed rates are move similarly with variable, they may drop as well. The problem we have had here, because we've had some negative economic news, and I even think we had an almost recession, a sort of recession, a technical
recession.
I think technically we were in a recession.
Two quarters
in a row shrinking is technically a recession. But alternatively, we had this massive spike in oil and gas prices.
Yes.
And continued inflation in some other areas, not as rapid, but that really pushed our inflation up. And the Bank of Canada, at least it's told it has one mandate. It's told it has one
mandate. I always smile when you talk about this because you say it so passionately.
Because it doesn't make any sense. Well, it does for them. They are told that they have to care about inflation.
Right.
They are told that their target is to keep inflation between 2 and 3%.
Okay.
And to move interest rates in order to do that. And so if inflation is rising, in other words, if the cost of goods is rising, the Bank of Canada cannot cut rates. Or should not cut rates, I guess, under its mandate. Because if it cuts rates and it stimulates spending, what happens when goods are getting more pricey and we're buying more of them?
Well, more demand,
prices
go up.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So that is where the Bank of Canada is kind of stuck. They can't really cut rates when we have this inflation, rising inflation issue. It's the reason they raised rates over the last 2 years, because we had, when we came out of the pandemic, inflation was close to 8%.
Oh boy, okay.
And they had to get that down.
Yes.
So they hiked and hiked and hiked and hiked and hiked and hiked until it moved into that three-ish, just under three range.
Okay.
Now we're hovering. We got down to kind of twos, and now we're hovering at the high twos into three.
Okay.
So what does all this mean? It means we have these two competing things right now, which is, one is bad economic news, recession, all those things would typically mean lower interest rate environment, but not in the context of high inflation.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Yeah.
So it's complicated.
Or rising inflation, I should say.
Right.
And from what I understand, again, I'm not claiming to be omnipotent in terms of what's going to happen, but from what I understand, oil and gas prices will not come down quickly. This will be a long time, even if the war with Iran ended tomorrow.
Right.
It will be a long time before that supply shock has made its way through the market. And so this is not something where if the Iran war truly ended tomorrow, we would see oil and gas prices just drop aggressively. Right.
Yeah.
So then we had this weekend where Trump had announced he was going to put in these 50% tariffs, and it sounded like we were close to making a deal. And then over the weekend, it was announced that we had not made a deal and these tariffs were coming into play. That caused, again, I'll explain why bonds are important, but that caused bond yields to go up. And so now what we're seeing is we're this last week, last 2 weeks and into coming into this week, fixed mortgage rates have gone up again.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, which is not good for the end consumer.
No.
Who is either renewing or trying to buy for the first time.
That's absolutely right. Like renewing is frustrating because there's something with a timing mismatch there.
Yeah.
If you're renewing and you can get rates on August 15th, that's the date, it was the earliest date that your lender will give you a rate for your renewal that's in January. Mm-hmm. And rates go up on August 14th. Really frustrating.
Right. Yes.
Really frustrating for those clients. The good news is they don't, you know, depending on who they're working with, some clients have the option to wait before they sign a renewal. Mm-hmm. But let's go back to why do bond yields matter? If you're a lender in a perfect world and you're doing a mortgage, in a perfect world, what you'd love to do is go out in the market and receive, let's say somebody pays you 5% on a mortgage. I'm just making this number up. Mm-hmm. And you can go out and pay that money to someone else at 3%. Mm-hmm. You've secured 2%. You're receiving 5% for someone. You're paying someone 3%.
Right.
What is this example of 3%? That's a bond.
Okay.
You issue a bond. You say, I'm going to give you a return of 3%. Every month, I'm going to pay you 3% on this bond, on this return.
Right, but I'm collecting 5.
Correct.
So I get to keep 2.
Correct.
If I you're can the do lender, simple math.
Yes. If you're the lender, you get that 2% spread. So in a perfect world, that's how it should work. But what if that 3% is now 3.5%? Are you going to do the same mortgage as a 5% that you just did?
Well, no, because now my keep is 1.5%.
Correct. Mm-hmm. So if you want to keep your margin, then you're going to have to raise your mortgage rates.
Right.
Right.
So now I'm at 5.5.
Correct.
Yes.
And so that is what's happening, is the cost of funds for a lot of banks in order to issue these bonds goes up, and they pass that cost on to the consumer.
Right.
There's a bit of a myth that in a high mortgage rate market, banks make a ton more money. And I'm not saying banks aren't very profitable. They're incredibly profitable in Canada. But that spread doesn't typically change. They're trying to maintain that spread.
Yeah, I was just going to use the word the spread.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
That's exactly what happens. So that's why bond yields are important with fixed mortgage rates. Because when bond yields go up, fixed mortgage rates go up. When bond yields go down, fixed mortgage rates go down.
Okay.
Variable rates,
on the
other hand.
I was just going to say, what about variable?
Variable are very different. Variable are, I'm going to call them human controlled.
Okay.
The Bank of Canada governors meet 8 times a year. They go into a room. They sit around and discuss whether or not they're meeting their mandate of keeping inflation between 2 and 3, whether they should hike, drop, or keep rates the same.
Okay.
And that's how variable rates move.
Okay.
So they move, potentially move 8 times a year, potentially do not move at all during those 8 meetings. So if they choose not to hike and not to drop, they don't move. You would expect, or most people would expect, that variable and fixed rates move similarly. In other words,
I think that would be a common
reasonable
thought, yes.
Fixed mortgage rates go up, variable mortgage rates go up.
Yeah.
Fixed mortgage rates go down, variable mortgage rates go down. But what we have had since, I would argue, February, but probably before that, is rising bond yields. Excuse me. So rising mortgage rates, rising fixed mortgage rates. But the Bank of Canada has not raised rates.
Okay.
So right now we have a difference between variable and fixed. Variable is a much lower rate for most consumers than fixed right now.
Okay. However, it comes with pros and cons.
Yes.
Of having a variable.
Yes.
And we can probably unpack that a little bit for people who are not familiar with the difference. Mm-hmm. Do you want to discuss that?
Sure.
Okay.
So a fixed mortgage rate is relatively straightforward. You enter a contract for, let's say, 3 years or 5 years. You guarantee to pay that fixed rate, and therefore you pay that fixed payment.
Yeah.
And that's it. Okay, and when
so
it comes
my
up for
mortgage
renewal,
payment is $1,500 a month for the next 5 years.
Yep.
That's
and it will not change.
Okay.
Okay. Unless you do something, sell the house, et cetera. But
right.
It will not change. A variable mortgage, on the other hand, you're signing a contract to pay a floating rate. That rate could go up.
Okay.
That rate could go down. That rate could stay the same.
Okay.
But you do not have control over that.
Right. And as someone who might be not a risk taker, that makes me nervous.
Yes.
Okay. Because if you are planning for your $1,500 a month and then suddenly something crazy happens in the world, as it has been of late, and your payment is suddenly $1,700 a month, sometimes that's it. Like yeah. Sometimes that can break people. And we've seen examples of where that happens is they can't tolerate that.
Correct.
Okay.
You have to have not just risk tolerance, like mentally, but you also have to have cash flow risk tolerance.
Yeah.
Because that piece in there is that when and if mortgage rates go up, your mortgage payment in a lot of cases goes up.
Yes.
When mortgage rates go down, your mortgage payment goes down. The down part's great. Nobody's complaining when the right. mortgage payment drops. But to give you an example of how hard this hit, during COVID, we had variable rates in the ones.
Which was crazy. Unnatural, unhealthy, couldn't be sustained, which
Correct.
Is what I say about all of that, including COVID.
Correct.
Okay.
And then fast forward over the next 4 years, variable rates went up 4%, right? In a very relatively short period of time.
Well, couldn't that have been in someone's five-year term?
Yes.
Like literally.
Yes.
So in 5 years.
I should say almost 4%, yeah. but yeah, close to 4%.
Yeah, you're right.
It was, and a lot of people really struggled,
mm-hmm.
really struggled, because their payments either went up massively. There were a few institutions that had what are called fixed payment variables.
Okay.
What that means is your payment does not change when your rate changes.
Okay.
Right. Those products, though, hide what's happening underneath.
Yeah, that would be worrisome because, again, to get far into the minutia, but there's a portion of every payment that goes towards principal
yep.
and a portion that goes towards interest. And you're paying interest, I'm going to use a very simple example, primarily for the first 10 years before you're even really touching any material part of your principal.
Yep.
And so if you thought you were paying, I don't know, 70-30, so 70% interest in the early years and 30% principal, and suddenly you're paying 95-5, you're never budging on your principal.
Yeah.
Which is scary and sad.
Well, and to use real numbers there, let's say you have a $1,500 payment. You have $750 as interest, $750 as principal. Over time, variable rates go way up. Same $1,500 payment, but now $500 is principal and $1,000 is interest. So instead of paying $750 right. principal, you're now paying $500. And then interest rates go up again.
Right.
Same $1,500 payment. Now it's $1,200 of interest, $300 of principal. So to your point, you're no longer, if you were going to pay that mortgage off over 25 years, maybe now it's 36 years.
Well, does that also mean that on renewal, you're renewing on a higher principal chunk than you had planned on?
Yep.
So it's kind of hard to get out of forever.
Yep.
Like it's very difficult to dig your way out of that.
It's why, you know, fixed payment variables can be right for certain clients in certain circumstances.
Okay.
But you have to almost keep up and or make voluntary lump sums to kind of keep
okay.
that up. So the staggered payment variable, you see what's happening because
yep.
your payment's going up or going down. But for a lot of people, that cash flow uncertainty is a real challenge.
Oh,
not
absolutely.
Everybody just has an extra, you know, $1,000 if they need it on their mortgage payment.
Yeah. Well, where we saw a lot of that is with investment properties.
Yes.
Because you can't increase rent correspondingly with the increase in mortgage rates.
Yep.
And therefore, you might be upside down on your monthly revenue stream into the property, where maybe you bought, and a lot of people did, investment properties in 2020 and 2021, and they were able to charge rent sufficiently to cover all their expenses and maybe even get a little bit of cash flow out of it. But as things changed, and rightfully so, the amount that you can increase rent is protected.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't do it as quickly, and now you're not flowing, which has made a lot of people have to sell those properties,
yes.
which has put a flood into the market, which has made prices soften.
That's very, very accurate summary, yes.
that's a summary of a complicated situation.
And that happened, you're right, and that happened with variable mortgages on rentals. That also happened with fixed mortgages because,
yep.
yeah, they came up for renewal,
yep.
and instead of 2.34, they were renewing at 4.69.
Well, also remember, there is a good chunk of people who paid more than they should have for their house in 2020 and 2021 because they got overexcited and overbid in a bidding war.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they come up for renewal and the house doesn't appraise or their loan to value ratio is out of whack, look at all the things I know.
Yeah.
then they're also going to have to sell because
well, they don't necessarily they don't have to sell.
There's solutions, but they're expensive.
There are solutions, but what's interesting is a lot of people don't realize, and I actually wrote down a couple of myths.
Okay, let's do
about mortgages, and the first one ties into this conversation. Which the first one is you don't have to qualify on renewal. And so if you are underwater is how we put it under renewal. In other words, the mortgage is higher than the value of the house or proportionately so high that it might as well be, right? The house is worth $500,000 and the mortgage is
$498,000. Right.
Most lenders in that circumstance, most, not all, are going to renew you as long as you've been making your payments on time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So they're going to renew you. Obviously, if you want to sell that house, you are going to have to pay. You're not getting proceeds from that house.
Right.
You're going to have to actually pay. By the time you pay, you know, real estate fees, legal fees, land transfer taxes if you're buying another house. But you don't, a lot of people don't know that you don't have to qualify to renew. So I've had clients who are not working at the time of renewal.
Okay.
Right? But maybe they're going back to school. Maybe they've staying with family or family's helping out and they can renew no problem as long as they're making their payments.
Okay, good.
Right? And so if you are, as long as you're making your payments and you're not, you know, in bankruptcy or something like that, there's no requirement currently in any regulation for you to qualify to renew your mortgage. That's if you're making no changes.
Right.
Now, to your point though, if they wanted to refinance to do renovations or something like that, there's no equity to do that either.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so that, I think, is a myth that a lot of people have that, and I get these calls sometimes where people are concerned about qualifying for their renewal payment, which they don't actually have to qualify if they're staying with the same lender.
Okay.
Okay. The second myth, I think, is that buying is always better than renting. And
that, really interesting because this is a topic actually for this show specifically.
Yes.
We're trying to be for everyone.
Yes.
And sometimes buying is not for everyone.
I 100% agree. And I have this conversation with clients. Don't get me wrong. I think buying is amazing. And I think there's a lot of buyers out there who do much better off buying than they were renting, but not everyone.
Right.
And sometimes, you know, I'll talk to a client. I remember I met a mother and daughter earlier in the year who had sort of a, I'm going to call it rent controlled. I don't know what else to call it, but the rent that they had was incredibly reasonable where they were, incredibly reasonable,
okay.
Like very low for what they were getting. They had been in this property for a while. They liked the building. They were well taken care of in the building. Like there were no problems with the landlord or any issues like that. And they were looking at the option of buying. And I said, you can qualify. That's not the issue. You can qualify to buy. But your costs are going to almost triple from where you're at right now. By the time you add in mortgage, property taxes, insurance, maintenance, you guys can go and discuss that. I'll do some numbers for you and you have the discussion. And ultimately they came back to me and said, not yet. You know, at some point possibly, or if something happens, we have to move.
Yeah.
But right now I said, you've got a great deal where you are.
Right. Well, where we see that a lot as well as with seniors.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of seniors want to be done with home ownership.
Yep.
They just want to write a check or do the retransfer at the end of the month and make all of the home maintenance or the condo maintenance the responsibility of the owner. So they don't have to worry about when the hot water tank goes or when the furnace goes or any of those things because they've just done it in a lot of cases for 70 years and don't want to. And it's so much easier.
Mm-hmm.
And then if they happen to be fortunate and they have a pool of funds from, say, the sale of their home, there's other ways to invest and make decent returns that are easier to liquidate when the time comes to liquidate.
Yeah.
So that we see that very, I'm working with a couple right now where, well, a father son, where the father is doing exactly that. He's selling his condo. He's done with it. He probably has 5 or 10 years left, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
And he just wants it to be somebody else's problem and not his kid's problem when that time comes.
Yep.
So yeah, we see that a lot.
Yeah, we see that a lot. And I think also when we get to that maintenance piece, when we're looking for first time home buyers or people who maybe don't have a lot of cash flow, the type of home you buy is important.
Yeah.
Like if you buy a home and the roof on that house is 20 years old, where's the money coming from to replace that?
Mm-hmm.
Because that's probably, I mean, you correct me because you're actually the expert more on this. That's probably the most expensive
Oh, for sure.
For a house, right?
That or the HVAC systems.
Yeah, fair enough.
Combined.
Yeah, combined. Yeah.
With if the you two, need a furnace and an air conditioning at the same time,
yeah.
It's going to cost you some money. You need a whole roof, that's going to cost you some money.
And I don't know if this is just
me, but maybe don't buy the house.
Yes, exactly. I don't know if this is just me, but I find as well, it's like there's like some kind of rule where once your dishwasher goes, your washing machine goes, it seems like they're all on a cycle.
Particularly if it was a house where all five were bought at the same time.
Yes.
So their warranties are going to wear out around the same time, and then they're all going to start to die around the same time. So that's a big pool of funds you have to have set aside, right?
That's exactly it. So, you know, when I talk to home buyers, it's not just about having enough down payment. It's not just about qualifying and being able to afford the mortgage payment. It's about being able to finance, cover, or save for those expenses that are coming, that you know are coming.
Yep.
Because very rarely are you going to buy a house unless it's a new build with a brand new roof, brand new appliances, brand new air conditioner, brand new furnace. Like, very rarely are you going to have all those things that are new. You might have a few of them, right? And so if you don't have a plan to put some funds aside and or be able to finance something like a roof or the air conditioner and the furnace, then that can get very expensive very quickly.
Oh, yeah. And that's definitely a financial strategy that everyone should have, particularly if you're going to be in homeownership, is a slush fund or unexpected expenses. You know, we had our hot water tank blow last year. We're going to need new furnace and air conditioner in the next upcoming years. And so, yeah, you put some away every month because as a homeowner, you don't know when that's going to happen.
It's true. We've had two furnaces go in two different houses, and both of them, I swear, were on the coldest night of the year.
Of course, because, you know, that's how the world would go.
How the rule goes.
Okay, do you have any other myths for me? Because I do have a question for you.
Okay, go ahead with your question, then we'll go on to
this. Most curious as to see what volume and if it's normal, higher or lower than this time of year typically of new applications you're seeing come in for mortgages. Because there's what is being talked about in the media at the macro level. There's things that are, you know, talked about even more regionally. And then there's what you and I are experiencing as feet on the street. And so I'm curious as to what you're experiencing, because I know what I'm experiencing, and I'm curious. I think you would be not a lagging indicator, a forward indicator of what's coming to the realtor group next, because first step always, go visit a mortgage broker, go visit Karen Matthey. And then the next step is, once you're pre-approved, go visit a realtor, preferably me. But I mean, it makes sense that I always also jokingly say, if you want to know how busy the market's about to be, ask a photographer.
Yes.
Because they're the ones 2 weeks out. If they're crazy busy, you know there's listings coming.
Yep.
So ask a photographer
first.
That's
a very, very good point.
So you're in that group of...
It's been an interesting year. So I would say the answer to your question is applications are up.
Over a typical August?
Over a typical August,
okay.
I would say yes. Because we're kind of in my opinion, in the tail end of the summer market.
Yep.
So we expect a lot of applications in sort of March, April, May, even June, getting in there during the property. We don't always expect as many applications as are coming in August.
Okay.
Because we're going into the fall and winter markets. But yeah, so I would say applications have been up over the year, year on year. Closings have been up, but remember as well that mortgage brokers don't just do purchases, right? We're doing renewals, we're doing refinances.
Yep.
So, I have to kind of carve the purchases part out. But I know that I've got a lot of standing pre-approvals right now.
Excellent.
And they're relatively new. And actually, during this exercise over the last week, because we saw fixed rates potentially rising, we relocked in, you know, we had a day where we just relocked in like 35 applications, just lock for the next 120 days because we knew.
Right.
Well, we figured, I shouldn't say we knew. As I said, I'm not omnipotent. We figured there could be a spike in interest rates. And so we wanted to get our borrowers protected
ahead
of that.
Good. That's one of the huge benefits of working with mortgage brokers, that you have that ability to do that for people. And is a lot of that first-time home buyers?
I'd say probably a third is first-time home buyers.
Okay.
And two-thirds are people who are looking... I think a lot of people want to be ready.
Okay.
If not for next year, even for the fall, that something comes up. And I think that's what... I think a lot of people sat on the fence over the summer.
Mm-hmm.
They saw the prices. They saw that homes are maybe a bit more of a buyer's market, a bit more reasonable in terms of price and negotiation. So I think a lot of people sat on the fence over the summer. And then by the end of the summer said, okay, it hasn't spiked up.
Mm-hmm.
I think we might be in the market. I think we should be looking.
Well, people were waiting for the bottom.
Yes.
Because people always say, well, you know, prices are softening. Mm-hmm. I want to wait till they are the softest, which is completely unpredictable. It's really just about what you can afford at, you know, what you want at the price you can afford and where you see the value.
Yep.
So it is hard. However, we haven't had a dramatic crashing spike in our local area.
Correct.
We've just had a softening.
Yeah.
And so you're sort of bouncing a little bit on a soft cushion and trying to see when the time is right for you. Now, you and I were talking about spread earlier, and obviously the goal in real estate would always be to sell high and buy low.
Yep.
Like, obviously, we all want to sell high and buy low. However, you buy and sell in the same market.
Yes.
So what's really important, and I'll try and do a simple math example, is if you thought your house was worth $1.3 million,
yep,
and you then only get $1 million, the million-dollar house you wanted to buy, you're probably only paying $700,000 for,
mm-hmm,
assuming it's similar geography, similar timing.
Yep.
And what really matters is, at the end of the day, that spread.
Mm-hmm.
And so people will say, well, I thought my house was worth $1.3 million. It's only one. And I say, yes, however, the one you wanted to buy would have, when yours was $1.3 million, been a million, and now it's $700,000. So you're still fine.
Yep.
Right?
It's, yep,
like, it's just about the spread.
Yep.
And that's where we have to really take it down to people's personal, individual financial situations. And you can accomplish winning the spread, and I'm, mm-hmm, using air quotes, right now and in any market.
Yep.
Really, whether you're paying more than you had hoped, you're probably getting more than you had hoped. And whether you're getting less than you had hoped, you're probably paying less than you had hoped. The best case scenario is you tap out and sell when it's highest.
Yep.
And then if you have the patience and the ability, then don't buy again until we're in a really low market again. Or,
yep,
you know, if you're cashing out, moving to the East Coast or somewhere where it's completely different market.
Different market, yeah.
Completely different, then you win.
Yeah.
That's essentially how it works.
Well, the other thing I talk a lot to my clients, because my clients will ask me questions like, is this a good time to buy? And it's something that I, first of all, as a mortgage broker, it's not something that I can answer easily.
Right.
Right. I can talk about rate. I can talk about finances. I can talk about pre-approval. I cannot necessarily talk about timing the real estate market. However, when clients ask me this question, one of the questions I ask them is like, a house is not, it's not like buying a stock or a bond or a financial investment.
Right.
You're living in it. You're,
yeah,
getting utility out of it. You're getting, hopefully, a massive amount of enjoyment out of it.
Yes.
A true joy when you walk in the door and being in your own space that you've, you know, maybe renovated or designed or whatever the case may be. And so a lot of clients that are coming to me right now, the ones that are not first-time home buyers, are clients that are looking for their next space.
They're, okay,
the space that they have right now might be okay right now. It's not going to be okay in a year or two.
Okay.
Maybe their families are expanding. Maybe it's the opposite. Maybe,
right,
they're empty nesters.
Sometimes they're too big.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's just not right for them. They don't, they wanted a bigger backyard, or the space that they imagined for themselves had a basement ensuite, because maybe an in-law might be potentially going to stay with them or live with them, whatever.
Right.
So there's all a whole host of reasons that I've had conversations with clients about. But at the end of the day, you have to love the space that you're in. And I'm not saying the finances don't matter. Of course they matter. But my, you know, the question I always ask people, I have a client right now that's buying kind of at the top end of her range, but she is in love with the house. She could wax philosophical about this house for hours.
Wonderful.
She's in love with it.
Right.
And I'm like, if that feeling pervades, that,
there's value.
Yes.
There's value to that.
Yes. 5 years from now, I don't think you're going to be saying, I wish I'd, you know, spent this. If you're really loving that house, you're going to love that house in 5 years.
Right. Yeah. Right. I agree with you 100%. So it isn't necessarily just about, you know, the buy and the sell. There are years in there where you're living your life.
Yes.
And there's nothing more valuable than being happy in the space where you're living your life.
Yep.
Like, no value can be assigned to that. It's, yeah, it's a great spot. I love that. So if we're thinking about closing thoughts for people who are thinking about making a move, maybe renewing or curious at all, what would your advice be for them for, I guess we're coming into Q4 almost now at the, wow, that's crazy, at the tail end of 2026,
yep.
What would you advise people to do?
Honestly, every single client scenario is different. So when I have a conversation with a client, I'm going to ask them, like, what are your goals for the next 5 years? What do you love about your house or love about your finances or don't love about your finances? What are your expenses look like for the next 5 years? What does your cash flow look like? And once we get answers to those questions, we can dial in as to what fits for them. What's the best renewal strategy or purchase strategy or refinance strategy or renovation strategy?
Yeah.
But have that conversation, get some numbers in front of you so that you can make the right decisions for yourself.
Yeah, I think that the summary of that in all scenarios is get a great financial team working with you. And that starts right with a financial advisor.
Yep.
It starts with a great mortgage broker and it starts with a great realtor.
Yep.
We don't know what we don't know, but these professionals are paid to know what they know and give you the best guidance for your individual situation. With that, thank you so much, Karen, for being with us today. I wish you and all of our listeners a great day finding your way home.
Thank you, Sherry.
through. If she were a holiday, she'd be Valentine's Day. 'Cause she's the queen of reminding you what's real and in your dreams. Like a river or an ocean, she is water, rushes in and rolls away. She's a high tide on your emotions. 'Cause her love only comes in waves. Her love only comes in waves. Her love only comes in waves. If you
That was Elise Davis, a Little Rock, Arkansas native now based in Nashville, with Waves, a track from her 2021 album Anxious, Happy, Chill. The show opened with the always unique and interesting Beck, with the song Morning, which can be found on his 2014 Grammy Award-winning album Morning Phase. Now, Beck actually took home two Grammys that year, one for Best Rock Album and a second for Album of the Year, beating out Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, Ryan Adams, U2 and the Black Keys. Hello, everyone, and welcome to No Chords Barred, 90 minutes of music that'll take you around the globe and back through time, this week going as far back as 1989. Now, I'm your host, Donald Finnegan, and with every show, you'll hear an eclectic mix of mainstream, alternative, and independent artists all scrambled together to hopefully show that quality music exists in many different places and from many different sources. Now, my personal hobby is independent music, evidenced by my other show, The State of Independence, which focuses solely on independent artists. But over the course of finding music for that show, I have found a treasure trove of music not quite right for it, but that still doesn't get airplay on mainstream radio. So I use this show primarily as a platform to help get that music into listeners' ears. At the same time, I mix in some of my favorite tunes from mainstream artists from the past five decades. So we'll start this next set with one of them. This is Patti Smith with Jubilee from her 2001 album, Trampin'.
Oh, glad they celebrate 'neath the cloudless sky. There's so sweet water pure, fields ripe with rye. Come on, come on, gather round, discard your Sunday shoes. Come on now, oh my land, be a Jubilee. Come on, girl, come on, boy, be a Jubilee. Oh my land, oh my good people, don't be shy.
In the future, we stand in the midst of fury and weariness. Who dreams of joy and radiance? Who dreams of war and sacrifice? Our vital realms are being squeezed, curtailing civil liberties. Recruit the dreams that sing to thee, that freedom ring. Thank you.
You and your half moon eyes lying in my arms tonight. No lightning, no thunder could ever steal your wonder. Yeah, you and your half moon eyes. Shines on forever. Yeah, you and your starlight's mine. I'd rather have a heart of broken glass than one made out of stone. I'd rather pick the pieces off the ground than always have to roll.
Thank you. think this must be the place. And if I cannot find the right words, I'm gonna love you anyway. You have my heart if you need me. I'm gonna love you anyway. Anyway.
That was one of my favorite American songwriters in May Early Wine, with one of her many side collaborations known as 10 Good Songs. The track we heard was Anyway, the title to their 2020 full-length album. Before that, we heard Winnipeg's The Brothers Landreth with Half Moon Eyes from their 2025 album Dog Year. And it pains me to say the late Glenn Hansard with Didn't He Ramble from his 2016 album A Season on the Line, still trying to get used to the fact that he's no longer with us. The incomparable Patti Smith began the set with the song Jubilee from her 2001 album Trampin'. This is No Chords Barred with me, Donald Finnegan, and I'll be right back after this short break.
CNIB is hitting the road to bring its innovative programs and technology to you. Drop in to meet CNIB staff and learn more about free programs and resources for people who are blind, deafblind, or have low vision. Explore assistive tech with hands-on product demos and workshops. Tuesday, September 1st, 2026, 10:30 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. at the Kingston Public Library, 130 Johnson Street, Kingston.
Join CFRC 101.9 FM for our Airwave YGK concert happening September 20th from 1 till 4 p.m. at the Broom Factory. Catch amazing local rockers Squid Pistol, The Winter in Canada, and headliners Lumpfish at this high-energy all-ages concert. Tickets are $15 in advance or $20 at the door, and you can get your advance tickets now at cfrc.ca. See you there, punks.
Communication is everywhere, but what is it? Communication is how you share your thoughts, your opinions, your culture, from what you see on TV to what you post online. But what about the people who are not being seen or heard? AMI is a media company that strives to be a voice for Canadians with disabilities, whether it's through positive portrayal, reflection, and accessible media. AMI believes everyone should be